for another fruitful and blessed week. Please grant us wisdom about all things we are dealing with today, and guide us to make the best decisions and choices. Fill our hearts with hope. All these things we ask in your holy name. Amen.
Amen. Commissioner Lopez, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, nation under God, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hess.
Here.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Here. Any changes to the agenda?
No, Commissioner, there is not.
Hear a motion, please.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Yes.
Commissioner Hess.
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Yes. Item A, discussion with New Elk Mine. Mr. Dornkamp.
Commissioner, New Elk Mine had reached out to us to see if we could hold a work session. They wanted to discuss updates for New Elk, but I don't see any of them on the Zoom meeting yet. So I guess we can wait for a few minutes, and I'll try and get a hold of their local representative, Mr. Head, and see if they are going to be attending the meeting.
Okay, well, give me a few minutes.
You today and to share some of our ideas, thoughts, objectives as far as reopening the New Elk coal mine is concerned. My name is Mark Ray. I am the chairman and CEO of Allegiance Coal. Allegiance Coal is an Australian company listed on the Australian Stock Exchange. It's a company that I founded 4 years ago, and our company is focused on the development, production, and export of steelmaking coal. Steelmaking coal, lots of coking coal, metallurgical coal. It's coal used, you know, to make blast furnace steel, the very thing that that this area did for a long time at the Pueblo Steelworks. With me is one of my fellow directors on Allegiance Coal, Mr. Larry Cook. Larry is from Charleston, West Virginia. He is an underground coal mining engineer with an enormous amount of experience. Here I say it. Would have not more than 50 years operating experience in underground coal mines, not just in the US, but in Australia. We've spent well over 15 years mining underground coal and also in Eastern Canada. Also, Eamon Mahan. Eamon is the Chief Operating Officer of Allegiance for New Old Mine. Eamon, also from Central Appalachia, the other side of the river, East Kentucky, and also an experienced underground coal mining engineer. Eamon is the boss of the New Old Mine, and Eamon will be the person who will be resident here in the county with his wife running the operation. He's already scoped some properties, and sooner or later, I suspect, he will move here. Jeff Weiss is a PR advisor that we engage to help us engage with key stakeholders here in Colorado. So Jeff has organized a fairly comprehensive schedule for us, which began on Tuesday night. So we are feeling quite tired. We've worked our way down, and we're now here in the most important place as far as we're concerned, meeting yourselves. And just before this meeting, we met Mayor Rico and City Office. Allegiance Coal, as I said, an ASX-listed company focused on developing and producing steelmaking coal projects. We have one other project, which is in northwest British Columbia. It's a project which I first acquired 6 years ago, originally privately, and then, of course, I listed that through Allegiance Coal on the Australian Stock Exchange. And that project is a greenfields project, unlike New York, which is, brownfields or previous operating mine. That project is about a year away from being permitted and about 2.5 years away from getting into production. In July last year, my company acquired an option over the New York mine from its previous owner, Klein Mining Corporation, who came here, as you're probably aware, in 2010. And I didn't want to negotiate to acquire it straight away because everyone I spoke to said to me that this asset is not economic. You can't get the coal out of the ground, load it on a vessel, and get it to the global market economically. And we are focused 100% on the global steel making coal market, not the domestic market in the US. My shareholders want exposure to the global metallurgical coal price. So, given that advice, I said, okay, well, let's get an option over the assets that we have been funding the care and maintenance of that mine for the last 12 months, paying staff, paying the landowners, paying the people who maintain the right of way on the railway track all the way to Jensen Yard. And during that time, we did an independent feasibility study. So we hired competent, independent mining engineers to develop a mine plan. They overlaid the mine plan with operating costs, with capital requirements, and we then put that into a financial model and came up with some numbers. Cash cost per tonne to mine it, to move it on rail, and to get it to a port in Houston. NPV and internal rate of return on the capital to be invested. And the net result of that exercise is that the asset is extremely viable, and it is an asset extremely misunderstood, really. As people said, you're too far away from the port, 850 miles away from the port. How are you going to get it to the port economically? It's people told us that the geology deed was challenging. But in an independent study validated that it is a very viable operation. It is a very substantial resource. It is 600, New York is on its own 650 million tons of coal in the ground. The neighboring property of Laurencito Canyon, which we've also acquired, adds another 100 million tons from just one coal seam. There's comfortably a billion tons of coal in the ground. If mined properly, you're looking at an asset which has a mine life in excess of 50 to 100 years. It all comes down to what the long-term demand, for blast furnace steel production is. And as far as we can see, there is no alternative to making steel other than through a blast furnace.
Quick question. The Laurencito mine area, you going to do the surface on that, or are you going to go under?
Our mine plans will be underground.
I worked that mine years ago.
The open pit?
I worked the open pit.
Right.
So, but at the time, the coal that we were receiving coming out of there wasn't the high BTU content. It was a high enough, so we were selling it to coal plants, and I think the contract was with the TBA at the time. And then they found a cheaper price because of the location. So,
yes,
it's closed now.
So, when I look at when we look at Laurencito, we're looking at the Premier OC, which is at the bottom of the Raton Formation. And in Europe, I think the open pit was a seam higher up in the Raton Formation. Yeah, no, Primero is a very good quality hard coking coal, from what we can see. Better than you are, actually. Yeah. There's the opportunity in that canyon to do highwall mining. It's underground, but with machines, mining into the exposed coal seam. But our mine planning is fundamentally going to be an underground operation. There will be no surface mining at this stage anyway. In terms of what we can see as far as geology is concerned, there'll be no surface mining at all. Okay. So I do have a presentation for the commissioners. And if I could just refer to it, and unfortunately those who are not here don't have it. I started my introduction on slide 3. And then I just might move to the next slide, slide 4, which summarizes some of the key facts of our study.
Tony, I'm going to send you a picture of this, okay?
So, Luis, if you don't mind, I'll see if I can.
Do you have an email copy, maybe?
Yeah, an email copy would be great.
Oh, yeah, I will send you an email. Maybe you can probably upload it for your email, Mr. Lucero.
I'll upload it and see if
we have an email for you. We can email it to you right now.
He's Los Animas County.
Thank you, Luis. I got it. Yeah. I can't hear on the computer. My audio on the computer, for some reason, when they were trying to
email the stuff. We can hear you.
Good. Yeah, I can hear you now. Good. Thank you.
I got
you. Thank you.
No, you got it, Tony?
Good. Thank you.
If I can interject, what slide are you on, page?
Four. We're on page four of the presentation. So just highlighting some of the key facts about this project that came out of our feasibility study. The second point on slide four is being stable and buoyant. Now, we think we can load coal on a vessel in Houston for $75 or $74 a ton. That price will not mean a lot to the commissioners, but I'll highlight that on a subsequent slide. At peak production, we'll be mining around about 2.5 million tons per annum of coking coal for the export market. It'll take us about 2 to 3 years to reach that peak production. It takes time to incrementally get there. It will require a full-time workforce of 350 people. And on top of that, there will be a demand for contract services. Initially around about 150, but that number will swell again to 200 to 300. A fully engaged workforce will be in excess of 500 people at peak production.
And is that going to be including various shifts? Are we imagining that 24-hour production?
The production schedule will probably be a week production, five, 10 shifts day and night shifts, 10 shifts a week with the weekend off, maybe 9, maybe 11. But our intention is to run this like a community business, not a 24/7 operation. We work during the week and they go home on the weekends, like any other family should. It's not the most efficient use of capital, but trying to align the business with the community is more important to us than trying to pump out as much coal as we can in a week. But it will require a number of production units that we will have. Certainly in the first 3 years, we'll get up to 3 production crew. So that's 3 separate operating units. And then grow over time to about 6. 7. Each production crew has a 30 with your day and night shift. So 15 on a production crew for one shift. And this doesn't include, your salaried staff at the mine. Okay. These are well paid jobs. The average hourly rate for a worker on a shift would be something in the order of, $25 an hour. And then your salary, and plus, benefits and production or performance bonuses and salaried staff, some of your contract technicians, your mechanics and underground electricians will probably be paid the skilled labor on site, but these are very well paid jobs, right? The slide also highlights, some of the direct financial benefits. In our feasibility study over a 25-year mine life, we would pay well in excess of $500 million in wages. The taxes also very high. The federal government seems to get the lion's share. The state taxes are very considerable. We do, of course, have a government landlord in the Parks and Wildlife Division. So the royalties that they will receive, and we understand that a lot of that will get reinvested back into the community, is also quite simple. So they are very large numbers. They can be eye-watering, but it's very real. Okay. If I could ask the commissioners to turn the slide over to the next slide, slide five. Just very quickly, I just want to note and highlight the difference between thermal coal and coking coal. I mean, you can forgive me if this is something already well known and given to you, but a lot of people like Z2, they still haven't made this distinction. Whilst this coal looks exactly the same to the naked eye, thermal coal to power generation and coking coal makes blast furnace steel. And for every ton of steel that is produced, you need 0.8 of a ton of coking coal. So coking coal, along with iron ore, are the two key ingredients, right? And there is no economically viable alternative to blast furnace steel production in the world. So the medium to long term demand for blast furnace steel production is significant. On another slide, I'll highlight that point again. Turning over to the next slide, and just some other anecdotal information. Of course, steel goes into society in many different ways. Your Tesla electric powered car comes from coking coal. Right? Your wind turbines, right, come from coking coal. For every 1 megawatt capacity of wind turbine power requires 230 tons of coking. Right. So there is no renewable energy without coking coal.
Without fossil fuel.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, just turning over very quickly, I mentioned in my introduction, we are focused on the export market. We're not here to supply coking coal to the steel mills in Pennsylvania or elsewhere in the US. My shareholders want exposure to the seaborne market. And what does the seaborne market look like? There are roughly three areas: Europe, Brazil, and Asia. Europe is the traditional market for US coking coal. So all of the coal coming out of central, northern, southern Appalachia finds its way to Hampton Roads, to Baltimore, and makes its way to Europe. If that's the way it's been for 200 years, I guess. Europe's a shrinking market. Steel production is declining. It's an advanced society. There's already enough steel per capita. Brazil is a relatively recent market, and it has enormous growth. It's just a volatile market because the economy is volatile, so it goes up and down, but the demand is constant. The growth market is Asia. There's India in particular, China to a lesser extent, Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, and Southeast Asia. They account for 69% of steel consumption. Almost 70% of global steel consumption is in Asia. India is the biggest importer of steelmaking coal, followed by Japan and South Korea. China's actually not a big importer. Steelmaking coal. It has its own coking coal production. Their coal, however, is dirty. It's high ash, high sulfur. It's not good quality. So they do have to import quality coal from Australia, Canada, and America. Right. Our focus is this global market. New World is actually very well positioned. A lot of people I spoke to said New World as landlords. You can't get it to a board. But when you actually sit down and analyze it, when you sit down and talk to the railroads, and in this case, Union Pacific, well, we've given Union Pacific a 10-year contract to haul our coal to either Houston or Mexico. When you sit down and read the numbers with Union Pacific, it is not that expensive to get it to either the Gulf or to Mexico. So the mine is quite unique, unlike Central and Northern Appalachia coking coal, which really can't make it to the Asian market unless you bring a vessel all the way around the Cape, or you take a vessel through the Panama Canal, which is problematic because it takes 1 year to book a slot through the Panama Canal. It's hard for US coking coal to get to this burgeoning steel market. Europe can get coal affordably to the West Coast out of the port of Guanas inside Baja Peninsula. And Union Pacific have moved some thermal coal for Arch coal out of that port. So they have established a really good logistics chain. So Newark, contrary to previous advice, is actually very well positioned. You can get access to the Gulf, to the East Coast, and to the West Coast.
A question for you. The railway right away. You plan to implement rail again? Or?
No, that's on a critical path for us to get that rail back down from the mine to BNSF main line, just south of Trinidad here. The right away is intact.
And there was some understanding. I'm also, we as Richard said on many boards, one of the ones I sit on is Council of Governments, which has been working on the study on that group that meets. There's a study that we're going to be doing for a hiking and biking trail up Highway 12,
right,
possibly utilizing the right way. So if the right way is still intact, we have this recovery where that may come in.
Yeah.
So because their thoughts were that you were going to install, the rumor was a conveyor belt bringing the hole down.
And that was from the mine to the rail
to the yard.
Yeah, down here, Jameson. So I can definitively state that we won't be building a conveyor belt along that distance.
And the other concern was Bobby Hill, the Texas landowner.
Yeah.
His writing, he was fighting and saying, so you guys wish it about that.
Yeah, so they actually reached out to us, Bobby's family, and some of the other mineral rights owners underneath the Hill family ranch. They reached out to us and they said to us, we'd like you to develop the coal resource. Now,
that's good news.
Yeah.
I was concerned about that.
You know, when we got the option over the asset, the first thing we did this week, we said, are the mining permits in good standing? Yes, they are. Is the right of way in good standing? Yes, it is. If the right of way wasn't in good standing, we wouldn't.
You'd have so many headaches with CDOT.
You cannot pull 2 million tons of coal on the road. We will start off pulling coal on the road, but it'll be about 500,000 tons until we get the track down, and then we'll gradually ramp up to 2.5 million tons. Chuck's an hour.
At that level we're talking about, the one truckload, whatever you can from. We have a small school here. We visited another school.
Yes, you're saying it.
And then one of my personal concerns would be the traffic on the road with a lot of the young students driving on that road. And then obviously, we really recommend and we'll support your continued looking into developing the track, because that would, of course, alleviate the safety. To me is huge, and again, mine, never been a miner. One of the things that I learned by historical perspective is that accidents, and we don't want to take any accidents, possibility, increase the probability by having that much more traffic on the highway.
Yeah, well, clearly, when we're moving the coal on the highway, clearly there'll need to be a work management plan. For example, thinking aloud, that we can't pull coal at school opening and closing hours, for example. There are times when you just simply can't be on that road.
Yeah.
But a management plan definitely would need to be agreed, you know, with the city and the county, as far as that's concerned.
And you probably have it on the slides, pardon me. I'm going to ask this question. When are you planning to begin operations? And then what about that, the workforce?
Yeah, so we haven't completed the acquisition yet. We are ready to complete. The current owner has some internal administrative details that needs to tidy up. It hasn't done its taxes for the last 3 years, for example. It needs to get that done. And there's an issue around the soil reclamation plan out there, which it is settling with DRMS. So we will complete the acquisition. We are ready to. We will complete the acquisition in the next 1 to 2 months. Then we'll start to mobilise, very low-level mobilisation payments, and some workers will start to arrive on site, and we will start to refurb the equipment that is on site and prepare the mine for returning to production. The target date for production will be in the middle of next year. Initially, the workforce will be around about 50 people. And then gradually, over a period of 18 months to 2 years, that will work its way up to nearer 200. Okay.
I think on your training and retraining the workforce, I was connected with the local community college for many years. I was the president of the institution for some years, so I would encourage you to reach out to the college for any training. We used to run the MSHA program out of the college, and again, I've been mocked for years, so I'm not certain where to arrive at the whole thing, but the partnership, you mentioned at the beginning, collaboration and partnership on the community, the community, to get the buy-in and the support. But I can tell you the community college could be a huge resource if you get to train whatever the case may be. I'm sure the public still has a lot of those assets in place.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a collaboration. In developing the mine and advancing it towards peak production, it's got to be coordinated between the government bodies, the regulatory bodies, because it's going to require input from everyone and direction and consideration from everyone.
At the time when Lawrence Hill was on operation, which was very brief, it was a long time. So I don't think the college had a program. And actually, we had to go through Floyd Massaroli, who's a former coal mine and shot instructor in the community. He's like 90 years old now.
Yes, it's
27 years old. So that asset might be a good thing. Are you planning to import workers from out of state? And the other question is the employment side of it is the housing side. And I also sit on the Network of Rules. We are contemplating how we can assist in this housing market that's just going to be needed for this 50 to 100 to 200 in the next 5 to 10 years.
Exactly. And once again, that's a coordinated approach to us and ourselves at City Hall. As far as the makeup of the workforce, Larry and Amon and another one of our management team collectively have been mining at the Gap Coal for 125 years. They have quite a significant following as far as employees are concerned. We will bring a nucleus of the workforce. So our systems of work, our methodologies for underground mining are slightly different to what your conventional Utah, Colorado underground coal mine might look like. And it's important that to achieve the productivity and the safety levels that we bring to our systems of work, that we have a nucleus of experienced Central Appalachian coal miners who can train the workforce, the wider, greater workforce.
So you'll try to recruit local workforce as well. Because there's another mine in Raton that shut down, or York Canyon, I'm familiar with that one.
Yeah.
In Mexico, they shut down about 10 or 15 years ago as well. And there's still a lot of possible workforce that was there that might be in the mid-50s range now that were going to be working at that time.
And there are coal mines in Colorado, through the north, thermal coal mines. points which close them down as we speak. But we'll draw from, you know, local community, the wider in the state. But importantly, with the nucleus of Central Appalachia, coal miners who've worked for Lowry name in decades. Okay. I just want to talk to one more slide we can turn over. And once again, it's just to, you know, give you more information about the market and about the sustainability of this project. There isn't actually a slide number, but it is slide 8. You'll see a graph there which is called the seaborne steelmaking coal cost curve. This graph represents the amount of coking coal which reaches the seaborne market, or which reached the seaborne market in 2018. 19 is no difference. On the left axis, that's the cost per tonne to load it into a vessel at a port. And the bottom axis is the amount of coal which reached the market. So you're looking at about 330 million tonnes in 2018. And that ranged at a cost per tonne from about $50 up to $160 in cost. Blue is Australia. As I said before, Australia dominates this market. Light green is the US, and brownie red is Canada. When I say Canada, I'm looking at British Columbia and Alberta along the Canadian Rockies, out of Vancouver and the port north of Vancouver, Prince Rupert. The key message here and the key takeaway I want to highlight is where the US sits on that cost curve. It's in the top end of the cost curve. So whenever there's price volatility, that coal disappears. That involves bankruptcies. Chuck Levy makes bankruptcies throughout northern, central, southern Alabama and elsewhere. The US is typically a very high cost producer. Yeah. New York, our feasibility study established that we would be in the lowest cost quartile. So you can manually draw a line across, and you, $75, so you drag that across, you can see that the New York Corporation will be in the lower cost quartile. And that's what gives it sustainability. That's what makes it a stable employer. Even though prices go down, and they go up over time, because history tells you that, the mine will stay in operation. Its margin will squeeze in a low price environment, but it will recover in a high price environment.
What is the cost?
It's in my presentation. $74 per metric ton to load coal, to mine it from the coal face, wash it, put it on a train, put it on a port, load it in a boat. That costs $74 per metric ton. On the graph there, you can drag that across and see that you are amongst the lowest producers globally. In the US, you'll be the second lowest cost producer.
So as you look for contracts, and I know you're talking about exports, but should there be, let's bring for a second, Colorado has become a steel producing state, and they come to you. Would you open up the market internally as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if one of the two terribly sad things about this coal mine and the coal mining industry generally here in the Rathlin Basin, the first one is specific to us. Someone took the rail away.
And because, you know, at the end of the day, they're producing the steel there, we're bringing it back to the USA. And obviously the cost is going to be more feasible if we can produce it right here. Now,
you want to take your board in China still? You don't
want to know why that rail was taken off?
Why was that?
There was a threatened lawsuit to the right-of-way owners of the rail, of the mine, of using it for a scenic route, scenic train. And so they didn't want to lease it to this company. Training there. So that's what we're So the, instead of going to court, they yanked it all out and sold it all and just recycled.
That's a, yeah, that's a $25 million mistake. Yeah. You know, the steel industry collapsed globally in 1980. And as you know better than I, the whole industry here just collapsed off the back of that. It never came back.
I wanted to kind of follow up, even a little bit of such another. One thing that I was thinking of, part of the call that you talked about, that Commissioner Lopez was talking about, or seeing that probably a lesser grade surface mining. In the long-term range, let's take the 20 years down the road, there may be a possibility for some of the coal to be used to create electricity. And you have a company already established in the San Luis County that's producing gas. A partnership between the two, somehow, you know, I mean, just kind of putting some way down there to create kind of a, and I don't even know anything about the complexities of combining the two, but I know if you mix something with the other and come together, there might be a bigger economic impact to this part of the state and this our community in the long term.
Well, there are coal, you know, the deposits in New York and Barranquilla and elsewhere in Victoria Valley. There are multiple seam deposits, and we're only mining, in our mine plan, we're only mining two or maybe three of 10 to 15 different coal seams. There is an enormous amount of coal here which could be sent to a power utility and put in a power station.
I think what's Commissioner Felix Lopez is trying to, we're looking at the board and the community of sustainability for our community. We've seen the booms, the bus, the coal mine open and close up was a victim of the North Sea boom itself. You know, go to work more and get things that you're done. So having these options that we work with all these different groups to work together. Matter of fact, the CEO of Evergreen Natural Resources in town, County Fair, and just discussing some other options for them. And this was, I believe, one of those scenarios that might be available for a natural gas power plant. There's some things in the works for another municipality in Colorado that might be interested in buying it. So there's a lot of irons in the fire, but I think the biggest thing is for sustainability for our residents, for our town, cities, the communities that are in Los Angeles County is our biggest concern because they have seen the movement of us. You say coal mining in this part of the world is like, yay, been there, done that. So,
agree.
Strong investors that would come in this community, and I'm hoping that's your portfolio. Can you tell us a little bit about your financing, if we may ask?
Yeah, sure. Well, the capital requirement to, you know, to return this asset to production is not significant. It's only, dare I say, $15 million. So that is not, you know, a significant amount of money. And my shareholders, including myself, who contributed well over $25 million to our company over the course of the last 4 years in developing our projects, we have funding lines in place to get this asset back into production. To ramp it up, we'll need more capital, but once you're in production, the ability to raise ramp up capital is significantly easier than standard capital.
And the price of the production is $74 a ton, but we can't buy gravel for that cheap.
We'll be calling,
our county roads with coal. That's pretty inexpensive.
Chairman.
Some of the things up in the region, that's the question.
What did Tony say?
I think you said Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Tony.
Yeah, you know, I haven't said much, and this is real informative. I'm curious, when we were talking about expenses and revenues, to kind of jump back, have you addressed the, or is there an abundance of water in that mine? And if there is, how do you address that?
Can you help with the question?
Water for the wash plant?
No, we're
talking about water in the mine. How do you address the water that's in the Allen Tank mine?
Our plans is not to mine the lower seam right now. The old, primarily the mining was in the Allen seam, which is the deepest seam. Right now, because of various reasons, we are not going to be mining that area, so water will not be an issue. We'll actually start in some of the upper seams on the new belt problem.
Did you hear that, Tony?
It was pretty garbled, but...
Let me repeat that. Our mine plan does not begin in the original Allen seam, which is the bottom coal seam in Newell, which is the workings of which it will be flooded. We start in a shallower seam, the blue seam, which has already was developed by Klein when they were there. Primero,
okay, so you'll basically be working in like the top three layers, I'm assuming, and not getting into the, isn't there six layers of coal, is my understanding?
There are eight coal seams, ranging from the green at the top going to the yellow at the bottom. We'll be mining in the green and the blue seam, which are two of the top seams. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And the Laurentia Canyon, Primero, is also a rather shallow coal seam which outcrops the surface. So water in the mine will not be an issue.
As production begins and the Johnson jar begins to be used, the previous company that they have a lot of problems with that's mitigation. And a lot of complaints from the local. I mean, you have invested, this is right, within probably 150 yards there. And at any point in time you go to the drive, you can sweep just this set over the property where Bruce completely. What process would you put in place so that won't be repeated? I mean, there was quite a bit of an outrage from that.
We stockpiles, stockpile coal, obviously we suppress it with water, but there are also organic chemicals which we can use, in fact, which we do use in the rail process. We spray on the coal in the wagons and that suppresses the coal dust quite materially. There's a lot of science to this. There is a coal port, I don't know if you're aware, in a highly dense populated area in Vancouver called Neptune. They handle 20 million tons a year. And there are residential towers which surround that coal port. The coal port was there before commercial property was. But a combination of spraying water and chemical compounds, the same compounds which we use to rail the coal, we will use at Jackson Yard.
And you'll wash the coal as well, the wash plant.
We wash it, and we wash it to take out the inherent rock, and also some of the coal seams we're mining, what we call dirty. They have carbonaceous patterns in them. They're not all coal. So we have to extract that, and the wash plant does that.
How bad is the water suppressing the dust affect the BTU content?
So BTU is not a key driver of coking coal. Yeah, that thermal coal, yes. Coking coal by its nature has extremely high BTU, higher than thermal coal generally. But when it comes to selling coal to a steel mill, they really not have no interest in the BTU. There are other things which are important to them as far as steel production is concerned.
Mr. Cook, you have a comment? Do you want to come out to the mic so our fellow commissioner can hear?
I'll just make some.
Okay, very good.
We're planning on more efficiently operating than Jansen we are as well, so that coal handling is not turning it over and over and over. So we will do a better job at the Jansen
loadout. Yeah, we're going to change the loadout sequence that currently exists there. But they were double handling the coal, so every time you pick it up, you create dust from. So we'll handle it once and load it onto the belt and away it goes. We'll also minimize the amount of storage capacity we use at Jansen Yard. So we'll have more storage in the mine, and we'll only load up the yard when we're loading up the train.
So you'll be your truck belted on to the train in one seamless.
We use it so the truck will dump it on the ground, we use a bulldozer to feed it onto the belt. A climb, we're using an excavator to pick it up and feed it into a hopper, which then fed it onto the belt.
And once the rail's put in place, this is a good point.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, not an excavator, a front end loader. Yeah. But you're right, once the rail's back in, it is a temporary thing. You know, the rail is critical to us, like I said before. If we couldn't get the rail back down, we wouldn't be. But for that period of time, minimising the handling and the way you handle the coal, don't pick it up with the front end loader. That's naturally kicking dust up in the air. Goes on the ground, you push it with a dozer, feeds onto a chain conveyor system, which then drops it onto the belt. All right. So this coal stays on the ground. Once you put the coal on the ground, it stays on the ground, and we feed it onto the loadout. We don't pick it up.
Minimizes the dust.
What were you dropping? 15 feet in the air?
It was going up a ramp, dropping it into a hopper. It's just everything's just dust, you know, dust when you pick it up, dust when you drop it in. So we have a chain conveyor system which the bulldozer push it towards chain conveyor, the chain conveyor will grab the coal and then feed it onto the belt. We actually took a feeder breaker. I don't know if you're familiar with the underground machine, the feeder breaker. It has this chain conveyor system, which picks up the coal and then takes it into its crusher, breaks it, sizes it for about. We're actually going to take on the feeder breakers at the mine and set it up at the front of the conveyor system. You feed the feeder breaker, which will then feed the belt. Quite considerably.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to ground my mistake for the surface mine.
Well, I agree.
I work with it. No.
But you made a point also, I just want to reinforce the point about, you know, the bang and the boom in the bus. The key, and what's absolutely critical to me, is where you are on the cost curve. If you're at the low end of the cost curve, see, I don't ever worry about price. What keeps me awake at night when I go to bed, what my costs are. You worry about the cost, you never sleep. The price, you never sleep. Because no one has a glass ball. Yeah, and you look at the historical price curve over the last 10 years, 20 years, however, it's like that. That's just the nature of commodities, not just coking coal. All we can control is our cost. And if we are in the lowest cost quartile, then whether it's a boom or a bust, it's irrelevant. That's just a function of my margin. It's really important to us. Okay, it's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tony, can you still hear us? Got dropped in.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Do you have any other questions, Commissioner?
No.
Just as a comparison, you said it would take about $15 million to get this.
Yeah, $15 million to get a half million ton up and running.
British Columbia, what's something like that going to cost opening up from
my BC project? Yeah. The BC project is a lot more expensive because it's greenfields. If we were to build this mine today to get into production, it would cost $250 to $300 million. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, the amount of infrastructure there, it is phenomenal. It's going to cost us to get into production 15, to get it up to 1.5 million ton per annum, 24, 25 in total. Not incremental in total.
Plus the acquisition.
Yeah, that's painful.
And then the rail, is that very big?
Well, that will be funded by a tier two railway company. You'll come in and operate that rail sphere for us. They'll take the coal from the wash plant, down to the NSF line, hand the wagons over to Union Pacific.
So you have contracts with them in place?
That's work in progress, but there's no shortage of interest.
Well, for me personally, I welcome Los Angeles County. It's about time we get some more jobs coming in back for community. Coal mining has been part of our history for decades. My father was an attorney and he came here to Trinidad. That was one of his big projects that he worked with a lot of coal miners back when the Black Lung was so bad in the industry. And then when I went into mining, he was like, well, be careful what you ask for. So it was brief, but it has helped shape this community and make families make a living for many, many years. And the foundations of this community, as you can see downtown, our coal miners museum and mines facility. And I'm not too sure how I reached out to that agency as of yet, the UMWA, or if we even thought of going that way right now. I know they'll probably try to weave into it. They did it for NCO, and NCO rejected it at the time. The workers, they weren't interested in my union at the time. But that might be another for your media, your gentleman that just walked out, to have him discuss that with them. Because then they're going to want to have a say in it too, I think, or they're going to want to have a say in it. But it doesn't mean you have to accept something like that for the union, but at least to have them at the table with us. You just never know how strong that union ties are for our older gentlemen in this community. But that might come into play. I hope it doesn't. But as long as the arm is extended out, I don't know how long you guys are in your other mining facilities to be part of the UMWA unions, and if that would be for that relation or not. My personal opinion is they're not profitable for mines. They cost mines too much money, and they don't have the influence anymore, like they did in the 60s and 70s. So, but again, we'll probably hear something from that agency community if we didn't ask this question or not ask this question. Because I deal with Michael Merrill and quite often he's retired, of course. But I just have to put it out here.
Thanks.
One more question. Can I get how you spell your name? The press is asking me. And it's
M-A-R-K.
Just like Mark, okay.
Yeah, and my surname is G-R-A-Y.
Just like it sounds, okay. I thought maybe it might be.
Heritage.
Okay.
How do you
spell
it? A-R-O-N.
A-R-O-N.
I thought you were going to church. But A's are all in the on it.
And Jeff had to leave. So.
Thank you.
Anything else? No. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's continue the partnership and I'd like to make a motion for adjournment.
Second.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have a lot of time. Yeah, we got it. That's right. That's fine. 150 years.